is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Michael Monks. Gardeners have dealt with record rain in June, hot conditions in July and August, but fall is on the way and it's time to start thinking about crops that grow in cooler weather. It's our monthly gardening show today. Joining me are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. You can join the conversation right now. Give us a call. And I encourage you to call early because I know the calls come in. If you have an important question, get in line early, 513-419-7100. You can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Happy to have you both here.
Thank you.
So what's happening in gardens right now? I know some people seem to have waited all summer for tomatoes. Are they finally here?
They are. We're starting to really get a crop of them. I don't know if it's just me, but I have been, you know, harvesting and tasting a lot of different tomatoes, and it just seems to me that they just don't have a great taste this year.
Yep.
And I think that we can blame that on the weather and a lot of things, but it, you know, and I don't want anybody to quit eating tomatoes or going to the farmer's market and buying them. They're still great, but they just, to me, don't have that same flavor this year.
You think it's because of the rain that we had in, what was it, June that was so wet?
I think it's a lot of cloudy weather and just different conditions while they're ripening. And I'm seeing a lot in our tomatoes, some ripening disorders, some really harder interior walls on the tomatoes and just some issues like that. And it's a funny year. It's been a funny year all spring and summer. And I think we're just seeing some of the effect of that on various crops.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of cracking and zippering, and, you know, those are still edible. You know, they may not be as aesthetically pleasing at the farmer's market, but they're still, again, edible. It's just the weather, the inconsistency of watering, you know, these downpours that have been sporadic throughout the tri-state, so... But they're still good. But yeah, I think their sugar content has gone down a little bit.
And maybe part of that is because of people can use them in other places, though, right? They can use them for salsas and things like that. And it doesn't matter what they look like at that point.
Absolutely.
You're trying to make them pretty on a plate.
A vine ripened tomato is still better
than a hothouse tomato.
Yeah.
What else are what's happening with corn? I was at the farmer's market last week, I think it was, and they said, "Yeah, we sold out of our early corn, and our late corn is still really short." So, what are we seeing?
It's a weather related thing. Sometimes they were not able to get into the field and plant right when they needed to, and sometimes you have various varieties of corn that will mature at different dates. And you try to, as a grower, you're trying to keep a steady supply throughout the summer. And no matter sometimes when you plant them, if we have really hot conditions, that'll speed up the ripening process. And all of a sudden you've got a glut of several varieties at one time. And then you go through a period where you don't have any. And so that may be part of it as well.
So you talked about beans. What about what other things are people growing right now that they're harvesting? Or tomatoes you talked about. What about beans? Are beans doing pretty well this year?
Yeah, we had a good crop of beans. This will probably be our last harvest of this session of beans. But, you know, we in our gardens at the office, we only planted one. So you could have had succession plantings of those. Our cucumbers, our first planting is over with. But again, you could have planted others, you know. You should, or if you haven't already, have put in some of your cool season crops, like your root crops, your collards and your spinach and your lettuce and things like that. So it's still gardening season for sure.
Is it too late to plant those now?
It's not too late to plant them, but it's too late to grow them from seed. So you've definitely got to find a source for the transplants. And there used to be a good nursery here that I think they quit growing them, but now some of the big box stores are starting to pick up and they're selling some of the fall transplants.
We just got a question from Janelle who emailed and she said, can carrots and lettuce grow in container gardens? And if so, how deep do the containers need to be for carrots and beets and those kind of root vegetables?
Well, for carrots, they've got to be, you know, however the length of whatever the carrot's going to be. If I was growing a carrot in a container, I would probably go with some of the shorter ones. And
there are short carrots and long carrots.
Oh yeah, there's all different varieties.
And rainbow colors.
You can get round carrots. You know, every kind of different carrots.
Wow, I'm sheltered.
The first carrots were actually rainbow colored, mm-hmm. just all different colors. But now they're all, of course, orange, or for the most part orange. But you can still get the others. But I would go with a pretty deep container. If you're growing a root crop, lettuce can be pretty shallow, and all those can be done right now. And there are some now. I would not overwinter them in a container, but there are some varieties of carrots that will overwinter that you can kind of mulch them a little bit, and then harvest them, you know, very early in the spring, which is kind of fun.
So talk about getting those plants in the ground now. What should you be clearing out your garden and putting them where something else was? Do you need to have a fresh space for that? How does it work?
Well, we're in a kind of a weird spot. So we're clearing out some of our, cucumber and beans and things like that. And then we're weeding because the weeds have kind of gone crazy. So we're actually putting down some plastic right now over our beds to kill some of those weeds before we go in with some of our transplants. So that's what we're choosing to do at our office is good sanitation, making sure that we get all those weeds out and kind of clean the soil before we get put some of our root crops in there. But yeah, we'll be going in with some of those and cleaning up all the weeds.
I have some raised beds, and when you have raised beds, you can't rotate a whole lot. And so I always find that if I can add an inch or two of compost to the top of that soil before I go in with the next crop, I always feel like, even though I can't rotate, that helps a lot. And so anytime that you have a good supply of compost, put that down as you change crops and before you put the next one in.
Again, our number is 513-419-7100. If you have any questions for our gardening experts today, they'll talk about your lawns and your trees and all that as well. You mentioned weeds, Sarah, and I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. It seems they have gone a little crazy this year. Mm-hmm. Is this, again, because of all of that rain that we had in June, or what's causing this weed infestation?
Yeah, I'm blaming it on Mother Nature again. Yeah, and so we have a really bad issue with purslane, which is an edible weed, actually. We choose not to use it as an edible.
What's it look like?
It's actually a really pretty plant. It's you can actually buy it as an ornamental as well. In hanging baskets sometimes you might find it, but they're almost succulent-like. I'm actually doing burning with as far as a weed management practice and with a weed torch. And so those take a few extra hits with a weed torch because they have so much moisture in their leaves and in their stems. I think they're really pretty. They just, they kind of like are a ground cover, but they are very prolific. And if you don't get the whole root in itself, they just easily propagate by the stem, so they'll just lay on the ground and or on like bare soil and through the concrete cracks and take root. So
you just said an interesting word, weed torch. I'm not familiar, so yeah, tell me more.
Yeah, we spoke about that actually. I believe it was our last segment, mm-hmm. and
oh,
I got
fault for not listening every second.
Yeah, so I've used them before, but we never had one at our office, and so I just went searched a few extension websites just to make sure I knew what I was getting myself into. And there's all different types of sizes that you can get with a big backpack tank that you can carry on your back, but that's large scale. So I just got one that literally the propane tank is like one of your camping, stove. And it's real easy. You can hold it with one hand. And we're using it, I've found, more of a preventative measure. So if you have a lot of mature weeds, it will get those. But aesthetically, especially in some of our gardens, beds, and in our walkways, you still have dead plants. So we're actually hand pulling all of those. And every few days I go out there with the weed torch as a preventative and torch any of those very microscopic little weeds that are trying to emerge.
How do you not catch everything on fire?
Well, you got to be, with this rain, actually, it's been in my favor for this because I try to go out in the morning. I'm never going to do it in the hot, humid afternoon sunlight. So I go out, that's kind of like therapy for me. I have weed therapy that I go out and I'm weed in a lot of the beds, and then I come around and I'm not doing it in like our straw mulched beds or anything, because that would be completely dangerous. But I'm mainly doing around the walkways, in between cracks of we have rock paved areas in between gardens, so I do it around there. I have tried it in some of our soil beds, but I make sure that it's not too dry. So
a lot of our commercial organic growers are using it, and it's an organic, obviously, control for weeds. And as Sarah said, it's really a something that you want to do real early in the season and get the weeds when they're small. And you have to do it regularly, but it really is it's kind of a neat approach. And it sounds kind of dangerous, but it's not. It's if you do follow all the regulations and rules, you're fine.
So, but have you seen a lot of weeds too? I mean, you see.
Oh, it's incredible. You cannot find a lot of my plants right now in my garden because of the weeds.
I give my husband credit. He went out this weekend in the heat and pulled weeds for 4 hours.
Yeah.
I did not. I brought water. Mm-hmm. I was not the assistant on that one. What about pest control? Are you finding that you have any of those, what is it that always gets tomatoes, aphids and those sorts of things? Is that a problem this year?
Yeah, I haven't had, now I'm going to say this and watch like the next few days I get phone calls, but stink bugs that were problematic in our area a few years ago, I felt like they were everywhere on the tomatoes, in the orchards. I was getting phone calls, but lately I haven't seen many issues with that. We're just getting a lot of, harlequin bug. Earlier this season we had the Japanese beetle, but nothing. I mean, they're there. I think insects are having longer life cycles, so multiple generations, but nothing unusual.
All right, we're going to take a short break and continue talking about gardens here in just a moment. I want to remind you to get your calls in and your questions, 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. I did want to ask, David, you were talking about the idea of wintering vegetables, the mm-hmm. carrots, so that you can do that in the spring. Do the mild winters that we've been having help with that, or does it matter?
No, it does help. It's, it's if the ground doesn't freeze solid, that certainly makes it a little bit easier to do it. And if you've got a protected area, that helps as well. But all those things kind of lean for you having success in the spring.
And carrots and what else?
Carrots, I think, a lot of times kale will overwinter.
Really?
I've had that happen. I've done okay with spinach sometimes. The plant will overwinter. I mean, you're not harvesting through the winter, but you can let the plant, and that will sometimes go
and you
make
put
it through the winter.
And you put some mulch on top
a
of
little,
it.
Well, not over the top of it, but okay, around it, just to keep the ground from, what you really want is once the ground gets cold, you want some mulch on it to keep it cold so it doesn't freeze and thaw. It's that freezing and thawing that can be detrimental.
We go now to Lee. Again, if you have a question or a comment, 513-419-7100. Hi, Lee. What's your question?
Hi there. Thanks for the show. I was calling because I purchased an eastern hemlock tree, and I put it in late spring, and I've been watering it very routinely because it's been such a hot summer. I'm wondering what type of watering it might need come fall and especially winter. I protected it from deer and I've amended the soil with pine, but I just want to make sure it's getting enough water.
Sounds like you're doing a great job, and I would just continue it when we get rainfall. But I really think it's important that you measure the amount of rainfall that you're getting with a rain gauge. And just because, everybody was talking about the big storm we had last night, and it sounded good, but we got very little rain where I am out of that. And so you want to make sure that you continue to water, and it's really important that those plants go into water, into winter with a lot of water in the root zone.
Does that answer your question, Lee?
During wintertime, just one follow-up. During wintertime, when it's evergreens, I don't think they go dormant. I'm just wondering how much water they need if we don't have a very snowy winter.
They do go dormant. They're not. The root system is continuing to grow, and that's what you want on a newly planted tree. So that's good. You mulch around it. But if you go into November and maybe do a final watering somewhere in there, early November, you should be in good shape.
Thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. Jess, what's your question? Jess.
Hi. I'm curious about putting potted plants inside for the winter. Like, I've got some herbs, sage, thyme, et cetera, that I'd like to use throughout the winter. I did that last year under UV light, and a lot of them died. So I was just wondering what's the best way to do that, whether it's a well-lit area or UV light.
Well, you know, that's always a tricky situation. So I never have great luck with basil, to be honest. That's always, for me, a tricky one. Rosemary can be a little, stingy too. So any potted plant, what I always recommend is slowly acclimate them back into, you know, your indoor environment. So, you know, cooler evenings, make sure you relocate them indoors, and then when we have these nice afternoons, take them back outside and acclimate them there. So remember that herbs, we're not wanting them to flower, so make sure you continuously pinch off the flower. So you will need some light. So either by natural light, but make sure that they're not near a heat source because they don't like that. Like if you have radiant heating or something like that. And also they don't like drifts. So if your windows are not very well insulated, so making sure that you take proper measures for that. And then you could do artificial lighting if you wanted to. You can actually buy really inexpensive light fixtures. We just have shop lights that we use, and they work very well. And we just bought a shelving unit at our local hardware store. I think it has 5 shelves, and you can move them up and down with 2 shop lights on each shelf. And that whole unit was about $150. Now that might be more than what you need, but you can definitely find, you know, something that you could fit for your situation.
You need to remember that the shop lights are super, but they need to be very close to the plant. Yeah. And I think if you can't assume that if you're in a room and you leave the lights on, your plants are going to benefit from it. It's got to be really on top of them, and they need to be on about 18 hours a day. So we put them on a timer, and they go off and come on when it's needed.
Thanks so much for your call, Jess. Do you also have to worry about bringing bugs in with the plants on you? So what do you do?
So I always recommend kind of giving your plants a bath, you know, even the pot itself, because sometimes underneath there might be slugs or spiders or things like that. For me, I put my pots in my bathtub and just give them a nice shower, clean off the pot, you know, even rub some of the leaves, look underneath the leaves to see if anything's hiding underneath there. Yeah, that's kind of what I do.
I go through a really strenuous culling process, and if I don't like them, they're not coming in.
So, what do you bring in? What makes the cut for you?
I've got some lemon and lime trees that are just enormous, and those, once I get those inside, that's about enough. But they thrive outside all summer long. They just love that. But the house is too small for these size plants.
And remember, a lot of times our house plants, if they're a flower blooming plant, you don't really want them to flower indoors. It takes a lot of energy from them. So you might need to pinch those off, kind of reduce your fertilizing schedule. You might even have to reduce your watering schedule or increase it depending upon what your temperature are inside. So
our number is 513-419-7100. Jim's on the phone. Hi, Jim. What's your question?
I've got a butterfly bushes, and I've also got Mexican sunflowers. I've been cutting the spent flowers off of them, hoping that they will bloom more and better. Is that the right thing to do?
I've never noticed it having a great effect with the butterfly bush. But
and even the Tithonia or the Mexican sunflower, which is one of my favorite plants, we never done that, and we have them in our butterfly garden. And But we've never pruned either, like cut off the spent flowers. And they just, for us, they just keep sending out new buds. So
yeah, it should work on the butterfly bush. I've just never known anybody that takes the time to go and do that. And so, you know, and I guess your plant should look a lot better because you've done that.
Yeah.
Good luck, Jim. We did have a couple of questions on Facebook. Let's see here. This person's finding blister beetles in the ground, especially when digging up potatoes. Why? It's usually just on the leaves. You have any ideas for that?
Blister beetles, usually I've seen them, they're above ground. And that is it's an insect that really, it's kind of a neat thing. I have seen them when they attack, but they usually attack one plant at a time, and they will devour that plant before they move on to the next one. You see them, they attack in mass, and so it's easy to control them when they're on one plant. You can even take the one plant up, dispose of it, and pretty much wipe them out. But they're called blister beetles because if you actually crush them on your skin, it will leave a blister.
Ew.
Yeah.
Okay, don't do that. We go now, again, our number 513-419-7100. Charlotte, what's your question?
Hi, I have a comment and a question also. We were talking about the weeds before, and I have a lot of creepy stuff that's under the shrubs and the mulch and stuff, and I've used a combination of vinegar, table salt, lemon juice, and Dawn dish detergent. And I wonder if there's any drawbacks to that. It seems to kill the plants. Everything that it touches, it kills. But I don't want to spray another chemical on it. But I just wanted to make that comment to see if I was doing any harm to anything.
Well, the salt concerns me because if you get that salt is very toxic to plants, and it'll kill the weeds, but it'll also accumulate in your soil around your desirable plants. So you might want to eliminate the salt on it. And the vinegar, I don't think that's any problem. And the lemon juice shouldn't be if it's working, but I would definitely get the salt out of there.
Yeah, I mean, all those home remedies, you know, there's not a – you may find recipes online. You know, use it sparingly, I would say, because it's not labeled for weed control. Just because it may be organic doesn't necessarily mean, you know, it's going to be, you know, safe for your garden, point in case the salt. So.
All right. Did you have another question, Charlotte?
No, that's all. I'll eliminate the salt, and I've been very sparing with it. Just little places here and there, and it killed everything.
But, all right.
I didn't want to harm the healthy plants either.
Well,
thank
good
you.
Luck. Thank you so much. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. We got an email from Scott. He says he planted pole beans in June. They are now 10 feet high, but they have no blossoms. He says, is there still hope they will produce?
Oh, boy. Yeah, they should. I don't know how he's got a 10-foot trellis.
Yeah.
There are some, and I don't know what variety it is, but there are some that really take a long time and that do get quite high. You've invested so much time already. I'd give them a little bit longer and see if they don't. I mean, obviously, if they don't flower, they're not going to have beans on them.
Yeah, and then eliminate if you fertilize, just eliminate high nitrogen. Because you're good on that.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, huh? I guess.
Yeah.
And there's nothing he can, no other fertilizer to add now at this point that would help.
No,
with that.
I wouldn't fertilize them at all.
Mm-mm. I mean, maybe sun exposure would be, but I don't even know if that really.
You've stumped him, Scott.
Yeah,
well, thank you. Thank you so much. 513-419-7100. Gary, what's your question? Gary?
Yes, this is Gary.
Yes, what's your question?
Hey, Dave, this is Gary from Grand Slick. You should remember
Gary.
Me.
How are you?
Good. I have a farm with all that ash trees but one, and it's healthy as a horse, surrounded by dead ones. My question is, there's some young ones coming up, and what's the status on that darn Asian, or that emerald elm borer? Is that going to get these young ones, or are they gone?
They don't like them until they get a certain size, and then they're going to take them out. It's funny. We think that, but they are. It's been shown that they are attacking, and they're just waiting for that ash tree to get a little bit more size to it, and then they're going to come in and they're going to finish those off too.
Darn. I thought maybe since all the other ones were gone,
I think it's still in this area and still doing damage. And
what do they eat when there aren't any ash trees?
Well, they're actually eating. You know, they're using it in the bark. It's the larval stage that's tunneling throughout the bark is what it's doing. And it's just I'm just not finding too many trees that haven't been treated with the insecticides that aren't showing the symptoms of emerald ash borer.
Sorry, Gary. We wish we had better news.
Could that one that's really nice, could that be maybe resistant, or what do you think?
You know, I don't know. I mean, that's always the thing that you want to look for, and I don't know. Just keep an eye on it and see.
I mean, I've overheard, I don't know the research behind this, but if there's one ash tree in this community, but there's 10 in another, they're not going to come to your one. They're going to hang out where there's a more density of canopy. So, if you have one standing, they're maybe less likely to come invade that. But if you start having, increase your crop, I guess there's greater potential that they will find their way back to your property. But again, I don't know how much science is behind that. That was more speculation and theory. So
good luck, Gary. Thanks for calling. Take care.
Well, thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
So Mary wrote in and says, squirrels have eaten all of her tomatoes, even the green ones. Is there anything she can do? Don't they just sort of take one bite out, though, and leave?
Yeah, but that ruins the whole tomato.
I still eat the other half, though. I get really stingy.
Squirrels are really tough because they can climb, fly, tunnel, whatever. They're just really, as a lot of people say, they're rats with tails, furry tails. And they're really tough to control. And, fencing just doesn't work unless you can go and completely enclose the area. And it seems like some years are just much worse than others with squirrels.
And just, I feel like we've talked about this before, but if you have bird feeders or other feeders out in your landscape, just be mindful of that. Even though the squirrels aren't your target that you're trying to invite to your garden, they're still out there feeding on the bird feeder. So if they're a nuisance, they'd maybe just eliminate bird feeders for right now because they're interested in that as well. But again, that's not the only.
I had a neighbor for years that threw peanuts out to the squirrels.
Yeah.
So that's,
we
had lots of squirrels, of squirrels. Yeah. Well, good luck, Mary. We hope that that they save you a few tomatoes to eat this year.
I feel like we're not getting straightforward answers today. Is that just me?
it's not our answers. It's the questions that are at fault.
Okay, well, we'll go now to Kevin and see how this goes. Hi, Kevin. What's your question?
Oh, he hung up.
There you go.
And they've done great.
Can you start again? Kevin, start again because we didn't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a tulip poplar and a maple tree that I planted 4 to 6 years ago in a part of my yard. And I guess with this drought, all the leaves pretty much died. But the limbs still seem perfectly alive. Should I water those a lot now? I assume it was just from the drought. Or should I just let them go and they'll be fine next year?
I would water them. I would if they don't have any foliage on them, that scares me because you can still have green bark, but they ought to have some foliage on them right now. I would go ahead and water.
And what do you think, David, about a light fertilizer this fall?
Well, after they go dormant, I think that'd be fine. But I would. I'm just. Boy, that's just not good at this time of year not to have some foliage on them.
Good luck, Kevin. Take care. Bye-bye. And we go now to Joe. Joe, what's your question? Joe?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, right here. Hi. I was calling about asking if there is a publication I could pick up. I'm a beekeeper, and to beekeepers, a lot of the weeds that other people want to kill, we want to keep.
Yep.
But I'm not really that good at identifying the weeds, especially before they've bloomed, shall we say. Is there a publication that would help me identify what the weed is so that I know whether or not I want to get rid of that one and keep the other one?
There's not only publications, but books.
Yeah.
So, you know, UK, for example, we have black and white, like pencil drawings of weeds. But what I find more useful, I need color, especially. So our library collection of books. So I think it's like the Northeast Weeds of America. If you reach out to me, send me an email or call me, I can get you the exact titles of those weed books. But what I use.
And I just, you know, look them up online, and you can go, they'll ask you the geographic area that you're in. And if you give them that, then they'll give you all the, you know, just great color pictures of all the weeds prevalent in our area.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck, Joe. Happy book shopping.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your call. Again, our number 513-419-7100. We have several folks online, but there are a couple lines available if you want to get in. Right now, we're going to take a short break and come back and continue our discussion about gardening today here on 91.7 WVXU.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU.
This is 91.7 WVXU. It's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. Joining me, Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Agent David Kester. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Alexa wants to know when to cut back her oak hydrangea.
Well, you don't have to cut it back at all, but if you want to, I would probably do that maybe early spring.
Yeah, I can't remember if that one is. So hydrangeas are a little tricky because some of them bloom on old wood, new wood, or continual bloomers. So that one might be on old wood.
Yeah, but
you don't have to.
No, it's sporadic blooming through it, you know, so I don't. I guess I really don't prune my oak leaf hydrangeas at all.
Alexa, don't worry about it. Sarah, you've got a program coming up in September. Why don't you tell us quickly what that is?
Yeah, Extension is partnering with SD1 there in Fort Wright, Kentucky. And starting September 6th and the four continuous Fridays in September, we have a lunch and learn series there at their Fort Wright office at SD1. And so these programs are geared towards learn how to effectively manage and utilize stormwater runoff on your property. You'll learn tricks and tips, and there also will be a rain barrel giveaway. I think it's going to be a awesome 1 hour lunch and learn. So if you are interested, have more questions, contact SD1 about that, or also call our office and I'll be glad to go over that with you. But there is registration is required. And again, it starts September 6th, the 13th, the 20th, and 27th, every Friday in September from 12 to 1.
And I want to remind you that you can find Sarah's email and all her information on our website, wvxu.org. We go now to Barb. Barb, what is your question?
Hi. I apologize if you've covered this. I just tuned in about 10 minutes ago. I'm wondering if there is a safe alternative to Roundup.
Well, we talked about the flame weeder, and that would do it. You can smother it out with plastic or just keep the weeds from getting sunlight by covering them with really newspaper or anything like that and put it over the surface of them, and that will eventually kill them. outright. And of course, there are what somebody called in before with the vinegar. There's a solution that you can use that does a pretty good job on them as well. But those are some of the safer alternatives.
Do they hurt the plants? Do any of these things hurt the plants? I mean, you've talked about the woman's comment about vinegar and those sorts of things. Do you have to just get it on the weed?
Or? Yeah, you do. Anything that you get it on is going to have an effect on it. So, and that's the same way that Roundup is that anything that it touches, we've got some resistant weeds now to Roundup, but it's a non-selective herbicide. It kills it all.
And when I use the weed flamer, the nozzle at the end is very direct towards the weed. So it's not a broad, head on it. So I'm really targeting that one weed. And again, a weed is just a plant out of place. So, if I'm in the rose garden weeding around the edge, I mean, if I hit one of those, the leaves on the roses, I mean, it's going to, brown it up. So I do have to be careful. And therefore, just like if you're spraying any type of chemical application, just be mindful on your windy days, which I'm not out there on a windy day with open flame.
We talk about flame, and I think people have got, that you've got to take this flame and scorch that plant.
Yeah, no.
And really you're singeing it a little bit and it'll kill the whole thing, but you don't have to turn it into ashes.
I'm not roasting it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though it does remind me of roasting marshmallows after I've been out there for a while.
Oh my gosh. Well, Barb, good luck. I hope some of those suggestions work for you. Thanks for your call.
So one more thing?
Sure.
I'm particularly interested in getting rid of some thistle, which grows fairly tall, a couple feet, 3 feet. What part of the plant do I singe? Do I have to hit the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, you really would on that. And honestly, I think on that one, I think you're better off cutting it. But the one thing you don't want to do is wait until that thing goes to seed, because it's just going to scatter seed and you're going to deal with that for the next 20 years. So you want to cut it down before that. And when you cut it down, then you can singe that part of it that's still on the ground, and it should. And then when it'll probably regrow a little bit, but when it's young and sends up those new growth, singe those.
Good luck, Barb. Thanks for your call. We go now to Jeff. Jeff, what's your question?
Hey, so I have a tomato question, and I've planted a few varieties over the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, and I struggle with what I think is tomato blight, but I'm not sure. I tried a fungicide earlier in the season, and that seemed to be okay, but I just looked at the garden this morning, and the plant that was reasonably healthy, I mean, it's real tall. It's about, I would say, almost 6 feet tall. The bottom to middle part of the foliage is just browned up and died.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then just to the top is starting to yellow, and then there's the little brown dot.
They are shaking their heads. Tell us what's wrong with his plant.
Well, the little brown dot, yeah, it was a perfect description of early blight disease, which is just tomatoes get it every year. We have very, very few tomatoes that are resistant to it. And you either have to really do a diligent job of separating your tomatoes, keeping them far apart, because they will, the early blight fungus will spread. You've got to rotate, and of course you can use fungicides. But I have some, Sarah and I both have commercial growers in our county, and the fungicide recommendation for tomatoes commercially is about 12 to 15 sprays per season. So, you've got to be out there after every rain and before rain sometimes putting on a fungicide. And if you don't want to do that, then you've got to do all the cultural things. And copper and sulfur are okay to use on it, but they're not as good as the other fungicides.
Yeah, and as David mentioned, the fungicide sprays, and it's a preventative measure. So it's not curing what symptoms you see today. So it's just preventing further spread of that those fungal spores. And what you're seeing now then on the tips is the late blight. And septoria leaf spot is another fungal issue, which we see sparingly sometimes, but all of which is still controlled the same ways, both chemically and culturally. So you're not the only one, to be honest. And I was out at one of the gardens pruning out all that dead, you know, at the lower portion of the plant just to prevent any further spread of those spores. So
good luck, Jeff. I hope you have some success there. Thanks for your call. We go now to Audrey. Audrey, what's your question?
Hi, thank you. I have a question about some hickory trees that I have. We have three big, beautiful hickory trees in our front yard, and this time of year, they drop so many nuts all over the ground. So my first question is about how to dispose of those nuts. Obviously, they get in the lawnmower, so I'm not sure if they hurt the soil when they get all chopped up. But secondly, of course, the squirrels go crazy for these things, and it's pretty disruptive to our house and our yard. Wondering if there's anything short of cutting the trees down that would get the squirrels to calm down on them a bit.
Do not cut hickory trees down. I moved my property. I moved into it 40 years ago, and it was loaded with hickory trees. And I wasn't that crazy about them, but I have learned to love that tree, and it is just as tough as can be. And there's really nothing that you can do about the nuts. It's just one of those things you got to put up with. I mean, obviously you can rake them, but you know, the hickory nuts that I get off of my trees, a weevil has already been inside of them, and so you can't use the hickory nut. But if you ever get one, a hickory nut, I think it's one of the best tasting nuts that you can get. But oftentimes the weevil is inside there.
Does it hurt, like she said, with the lawnmower?
Yeah, I mean, if you continually go, it doesn't hurt for them to decay in the ground at all. But, you know, I guess it could, and if they start shooting out the side of the lawnmower,
they're
like a rock. Yeah. So that's obvious a problem. But hickories are just such great trees.
Good luck, Audrey. Thank you. Somebody wrote in, and Todd wants to know where he can buy a pawpaw tree.
Ooh, well, did you have your class yet, Kester?
No.
So I know both in our counties, I think that you have a pawpaw class coming up at the Arboretum or maybe at your office. I don't know. And I have one coming up in September. We're not giving away pawpaw trees, but we have a list of some. There's a nursery in Frankfurt, and there's some out-of-state nurseries, too, that we've ordered from, and they we get certain varieties. I mean, you could probably go – I've seen them selectively in some nurseries, but they're not named varieties. So we're looking for named varieties, and our sister land-grant university, Kentucky State University in Frankfurt, is the lead researcher of pawpaw. So we get all the up-to-date information on that. And if you haven't done so, pawpaws, by the way, is my favorite fruit ever, well, followed by maybe – watermelon. But I get really excited about pawpaws. And if you haven't done so, the variety of flavor is outstanding. And we will be doing some pawpaw tasting at our class coming up in September, and also some pawpaw ice cream.
All right. Go check it out at our website, and you can find the links to those WVXU.org.
Make sure you get a cultivar, because they really vary by seedling. And the taste of a cultivar like Shenandoah or Atwood, just phenomenal. And so you don't want – I mean, I'm not saying it's a wonderful tree and the seedlings are fine, but if you really want the fruit, then get a cultivar.
And make sure that you have to get two, and they actually pollinate by flies. So be mindful of that. They're not pollinated by bees or other insects.
A use for flies, that's something to know. All right, Jennifer, what's your question? Hi, Jennifer.
Oh, hi there. Hi. So I have a house now, and I'm growing my first garden, and I have sugar pumpkins, and I'm getting white spots all over the leaves. Mm-hmm. I don't see any bugs underneath anything, but I got white spots on the leaves, and I'm not getting any female flowers.
That's mildew. And do you have pumpkins on the vines now?
No, there is no fruit. So it's just flowers, and I've been eating some of the blossoms, and they're all male flowers. I get no female
When did you plant them?
In May.
Wow. Oh. They should definitely. Yeah. Something went wrong. Either the flowers didn't get pollinated, or you're not getting you're getting all male flowers, but that really does not happen that much. I don't know what's you say you're not eating all the flowers, are you?
No, I've only eaten six, maybe.
Okay. Now one of the things that you can do. It's getting very late in the year, and I don't think you're going to get any now. Mm-hmm. But sometimes when you don't think you're getting some, you can take a Q-tip and go to the male flower and get some of the pollen on it, and then go to the female flower with that Q-tip with the pollen on it and just kind of attach it to the female part of the flower. And that should give you pollination and hopefully fertilization and fruit.
Good luck.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe next year will be a better year.
Yeah, we'll see. Everything else is working great, just those. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, You're Jennifer. Welcome. We appreciate your call. Hi, we have just a few seconds left, a few minutes left. Steve, what's your question? Hi, Steve, what's your question?
I grew potatoes this year, and they were very robust green plants. They've all died back, and I noticed some of the potatoes are peeking out of the ground. Should I leave those in the ground still, even though they're peeking out, or harvest them?
Harvest them. No. If they're exposed to sunlight, they're going to start to get sun scald and green up, and you don't want that. And if the plants are gone, there's no reason to leave them in the ground. And so I would start to harvest those and enjoy them.
Good luck, Steve. Happy potato chips or whatever you're going to make.
Yeah.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Quick question now from Kate. Hi, Kate. What's your question?
Hello?
Yes, Kate. Go right ahead.
Oh, hey. I picked up from a good store a patio fig tree is what they're calling it. And they say it's hardy. So I'm trying to figure out, do I bring it in over the winter? Do I let it stay on the patio? Do I repot it? Any thoughts on how to handle it?
Did you say fig?
Patio fig
yes.
tree.
Fig tree. Okay. It should be. Figs are hardy here, but they do need protection. And the best place for that pot is in the ground. And you can dig the entire pot and place it in the ground. And then you got to really mulch that carefully. And the more that the higher you can mulch up the stem, and I've seen people do some elaborate enclosures for their fig trees, and they will overwinter, and you'll get fruit the next year. But
don't bring it in, just put it in the ground.
Just put it in the ground.
Put it in the ground. Dig a hole, Kate. That's the goal here, I guess, right?
In the pot.
In the pot.
Leave it
in the pot. Thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody's questions today, but we are just about out of time. Thank you both for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Always fun.
We've been talking gardening today. My guests have been Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. Producer for today's program is Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer is Selena Reeder. Today's technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks.